Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. On the June ballot, voters will be judging the judges when they cast their ballots in the judicial races. But now some controversy has arisen over just how the County Bar Association issues its ratings for judicial candidates. Now, the Bar Association in the current election has given lacking qualifications ratings to three candidates. And they've also given a well-qualified rating to one incumbent judge who was once arrested for driving under the influence on the wrong side of the road, who pled guilty to reckless driving, and who has had several disciplinary actions against her. The three candidates who received the lacking qualifications included two of them who had had some controversies of their own. One of those was Douglas Crawford, who is facing a suspension of his state bar license, although he is fighting that suspension. The other one, second one, is Ken Gosselin. Gosselin was accused of inflating his experience and educational background. One of his opponents took him to court, and he signed a stipulation, which a judge signed requiring him to change his ballot statement. The third one, however, is Michelle Hagan, and Michelle has some fairly extensive qualifications and no disciplinary action on record, so we've invited her to come here today and speak about this whole issue. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Hi there.
Tell us what race you're running in.
I'm in race number 25. It's an open race, and there are two other opponents.
Right. One of those is Gosselin, who we've mentioned also got the lacking qualifications, and the third candidate is Brad Weinreb, who is a deputy attorney, and he was ranked qualified, the middle of the three qualifications. So, Michelle, let's talk a little bit about some of your qualifications, first of all.
I've been a lawyer for 25 years. I served as a deputy city attorney in San Diego for many years. I prosecuted child abuse and domestic violence cases. I also served as an assistant district attorney in San Francisco. I also sat as a judge pro tem. And I've been a past board member of the League of Women Voters and Lawyers Club of San Diego.
Yeah, you've also been a legal analyst on TV and radio, I understand.
Yes, and quite a bit of my career has been informing and educating the public about the legal process and how to navigate the legal landscape as a legal analyst. I'm also a certified fraud examiner as well.
And where did you get your law degree?
I went to University of San Francisco, and I'm also a proud graduate of UCSD.
Okay, very good. You also write a blog on legal issues for consumers, I understand.
Yes, I do. I started my company Trial Ready, which is actually to teach lawyers trial skills, because I learned early on, having done quite a few trials myself and having supervised, I was a supervising trial attorney at the San Diego City Attorney's Office. And actually, I taught nationally and still do with the premier trial advocacy. I taught with the National Institute for Trial Advocacy. And then I started my company called Trial Ready, and that is to help attorneys and the general public to navigate and to best represent themselves in court.
Okay.
And some of the articles that I have written have been to help the public, such as if you want to dispute your attorney's fees, or if it's a good idea to represent yourself in court. So my goal has always been to educate and inform the general public.
Now, for the record, have you ever had any discipline actions against you by the State Bar Association or any criminal?
None.
Actions, anything?
No, nothing.
Nothing. So you have an unblemished record from that standpoint.
Yeah, I have a stellar record. I've accomplished quite a bit in my 25-year career. You don't get to positions of being an assistant district attorney or being a judge pro tem or being a deputy city attorney or being a certified fraud examiner or being asked to be on national TV to comment on cases if you have anything. That speaks volumes about my integrity.
Now, the County Bar Association, in issuing these ratings, They're not here today. If they were, I imagine that they would say that there have been cases in the past where there were judges who had disciplinary actions, one of them was kicked off as a judge pro tem, things like that, where perhaps, arguably, there might be some reason to let the public know about it, somebody.
Well, actually, just to let you know, their reasons for their ratings are confidential.
I know.
So they're not in a position where they should be or could be commenting on any reasons why.
Okay. The criteria that they give, because they're not here, I'm going to go over briefly what the criteria are that they say that they use. It's a pretty long list. It includes some obvious things like trial experience, industry work habits, fairness and objectivity, but it also includes some things that are subjective, judicial temperament, judgment and common sense, compassion, integrity, courage, as well as any other factor that might affect the candidate's ability to serve as judge. And interestingly, education is not even listed on this list of qualifications. Maybe that's under knowledge of the law, which is on there. But it begs the question that these are issued without any explanation of why any specific judge received the rating that they did, or judicial candidate received the rating that they did. So, Michelle, do you have any insights into why you believe you may have received this negative rating?
Well, let me just say, as a fraud examiner, I think it's really important that you have credible and verifiable facts for any basis of any opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they voted the way they voted. I can only tell you that in an interview, they were not happy with the fact that I wrote about a case in which a rape victim was ordered by the judge to pay alimony to her husband.
Wow.
Who had been convicted of raping her.
So they told
convicted,
you they did,
I should say convicted of sodomy, actually.
So they told you they didn't like your blog entry about this man who had raped his wife, or had sodomized his wife. He was convicted?
Yeah, he was convicted and sent to prison for 6 years.
And she had to pay alimony.
Yeah, she was ordered by the judge to pay alimony. And, you know, I think most people would be very shocked and surprised about that. And,
yeah.
You
is
know,
that,
I believe...
Is that judge still on the bench, by the way?
Yes, he's still on the bench.
Interesting.
And what's even more significant is, you know, a law was passed because of this case to curb any judge in the future from doing something like this.
You were active in getting that
law
passed,
I understand. Yeah, I was active in helping the victim get the law passed. But they're not calling out the governor who signed the law. They're not calling out the new Speaker of Assembly who backed the law. And they're not calling out the local DA.
So how do you feel about the fact that apparently if a lawyer speaks out about an injustice that they feel that they have witnessed, that could come back to haunt you if you decide to run to be a judge someday? And to be clear, by the way, you spoke out about this and wrote that particular blog entry before you were even running as a judge, correct?
Right, but, you know, as a citizen, you don't give up your opinions. And I've written about a lot of different things. And I understand their, you know, whatever their hesitation is, and maybe it's unsettling to them. But you know what? I don't look the other way in the face of injustice. I was a prosecutor for many years, and I have done defense work, and I've sat as a judge pro tem. I think, you know, we become lawyers. We're in the best position to know when things go awry. And the Constitution is important to all of us. And part of the Constitution is the right of free speech. You don't give that up just because you become a lawyer. So and my intention has been, and I think they misunderstood my intention. My intention has always been to educate and inform the public. And this is something they need to know about. You know, our courtrooms are not supposed to be places of secrecy. And opinions and decisions and orders are not to be places of secrecy. You know, all of this, it's the public courtroom. And, you know, everybody is held to account. And, you know, as sitting as a judge, judges get challenged all the time. I mean, have they ever tried a case or been in arraignment court when judges are yelled at about this and that? I mean, it happens all the time.
Sure.
If I had put it in an appellate brief, what is the difference? So, I mean, with all due respect to them, I just, you know, I'm a bit surprised that they would give. I have an incredible record, and I've handled criminal cases and civil cases, and you really don't get that with, you know, judicial candidates. I mean, I'm the real deal here, and I am just trying to be a good guardian of justice.
Very good. Well, thank you very much for enlightening us on that, Michelle. Now, judicial candidates, there are some limits, of course, on what they can say. They're not allowed to talk about specific issues or cases that come before them on the bench, obviously. But, Michelle, back to your comment about judicial candidates having free speech. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that for us?
Yeah, I mean, we all have free speech. And you have to think, you know, Lady Justice wears a blindfold. She doesn't wear a gag. You know, we're allowed to speak up, and we should, as lawyers, when we know, and having handled domestic violence and child abuse cases for many years, I feel that I have a responsibility to keep an eye on what's going on in the courtrooms. And after 25 years and trying many, many cases, both criminal and civil, I think it's important that we also participate in the process.
Now, the New York Times, interestingly, just this week came out with a very timely article titled, How Not to Pick Judges. Can you share some highlights? I believe you brought the article to our attention, Michelle. Can you share a few of the findings reported in that story?
Right. Well, you know, you can put my opinion aside as to commenting on their opinion as to what my qualifications are. But, you know, we have a study here that was done, a quite extensive study, where they looked at 52 years of data on the American Bar Association doing ratings of judicial nominees. And what the professor, the researcher who did this study, she has a PhD from Harvard. She has a JD from Stanford. And this study is supported by the Harvard Center for American Political Studies. And it's this study came out in the Journal of Law and Courts just in the spring of 2014. Some of the highlights are, I mean, basically what this study is telling us is that the ratings aren't predictive of anything. They don't, if you're qualified, if you are ranked as well qualified, qualified, or lacking qualifications, it doesn't mean that you're going to be a good judge or not a good judge. They looked at what's called reversal rates.
In other words, if a judge's decision is appealed, how often it's reversed by a higher
court.
Often
it's reversed. So that was one indicator they looked at to judge whether or not a judge would be a good judge for the bench. And what they found out is these ratings that are done by the ABA and other bar associations don't correlate with the performance of the judge. So why are we doing these ratings?
Very intriguing question. Now, I'm wondering what the options are here. Let's go back to our local county bar association for a moment. What are some of the options we could look at? For example, I guess one option would be they just give up and don't do these ratings at all. On the other hand, that puts us back to the situation where sometimes maybe there is a real red flag and the public needs a way to know that. Is there something in between, no ratings at all? What are the different options that could be done? Let's discuss that first.
Well, okay, first of all, let's start with the factual finding, which is the study that says the ratings aren't predictive. So why are we doing the ratings? Mm-hmm. If we were to do the ratings, it needs to be transparent, and there needs to be verifiable facts.
Criteria, in other words.
Criteria, yeah. As a certified fraud examiner, I look at things such as control for bias. Mm-hmm. I look at the methodology used. I look at the basis for the reason. None of that were given. It's not transparent at all.
So, for example, if they were to have a list of law schools that were rated, you know, for example, if someone came from a law school that was not credentialed or something like that.
Right. Well, this study that was done looked at, you know, where you went to law school. I mean, that was one of the factors they threw into the study to determine whether or not it was predictive or not.
Interesting.
Okay. Well,
was it?
No. See, it's not. Yeah. I mean, it's the other important fact about the study is that it shows that the ratings disadvantage minority and female candidates.
Very important.
They tend to get lower ratings, and that impacts who sits on the bench. Because if women and minorities are not rated highly enough, then they don't get nominated to the bench or voted into office, right?
So are you saying this is sort of an old boys network where these career judges and prosecutors and attorneys, largely male, are basically...
Well, I'm not theorizing anything. I'm just relying on what the facts show us. And that, you know, in this study, which is quite extensive, shows us, you know, that it's not predictive, these ratings. Why are we doing these ratings? And it doesn't screen out any possible bias. The example of that is the fact that the women and the minorities are getting lower ratings, lower rankings. If it has nothing to do with your qualifications and your experience, why are they getting lower ratings?
Very interesting. Now, I've also heard the idea thrown out there that maybe we should have somebody other than just the Bar Association, you know, if there were to be any ratings of judges or judicial candidates, that perhaps they should bring in, you know, victims' rights advocates or other kinds of groups from the community.
Okay, that's assuming the ratings are predictive. If we know they're not, because historically we've got 52 years of data that shows that they're not predictive of how you're going to perform. But if you want to make it a transparent process, which it should be, just put up the qualifications of the candidate. This is where they went to school. This is the area they practice. Other states do it. I think it's Michigan and Ohio does it.
There you go.
Or Washington and Ohio.
You could certainly list, say, disciplinary actions.
Yeah, why not do objective factors as opposed to giving opinions which are subjective? And you don't know. This is a political race, right? Mm-hmm. You don't know what people's agendas are or what their motivations are.
Yeah, so potentially you could have political agenda, although I will say in this case the ratings have been on both sides of the aisle.
Right. Well, the ratings are also very questionable when you take a judge, a sitting judge, who's been three times disciplined by the Judicial Commission and also has a conviction, which, by the way,
we're talking about Judge Lisa Shaw, by the way, who, for the record, is not your opponent.
No, but she was rated also by the same, by the County Bar Association. And even with three disciplines and a conviction for reckless driving, she gets well qualified. I mean, what does that say about the integrity of
the
ratings? Yeah, and the objectivity. The other big issue that I have, and this is new to me. I mean, I haven't run for political office. I'm just a lawyer who's trying to make sure that we have well-qualified judges sitting on the bench.
Why is it important for people to care about who gets elected as a judge? I know that may sound like a silly question, but I imagine there's a lot of people out there probably thinking, I've never been arrested. Or
because it matters. Because if you go through a divorce, it matters. If your child, if you risk having your children taken away from you, or your home being taken away from you, or you have a botched medical surgery, you know, or you have a speeding ticket, it does matter. Justice should not be tampered with. We care about justice in this country, and we want fair-minded, impartial, experienced judges. The county bar is trying to do the right thing by providing information, but the problem is all they're giving us is an opinion. They're not telling the voters where we went to law school. They're not telling the voters what areas we practice. Have we been disciplined? All that stuff is objective, and you can leave it for the voters to decide. Voters are smart enough to do their own research and not rely on opinions of others. They'll go out. You can Google Michelle Hagan. You can go to trialready.com. You can go to Hagan for Judge. And the information is out there. And in fact, what's interesting to me is the county bar has been doing ratings since 1978. And I run around the county talking to voters, and voters are saying to me, there's not enough information. We don't know anything about judges. Well, why am I the one who puts together a list, 10 things to know about judicial elections, to educate and inform voters? Why isn't that information out there?
And I do need to throw out there that if you go to the eastcountymagazine.org website, we do have information up there about candidates in this race. Now, the other issue that I've heard is this whole issue of whether some attorneys who are involved in this rating system may sometimes have cases before some of the judges, in the case of incumbent judges, that they're actually rating, which would not apply in your case since you're not running against an incumbent, Michelle. But I'd like to ask your opinion about that.
Here's the analogy I give people. You know, if we don't let football players pick referees, why are we letting attorneys pick judges? I mean, why it hasn't occurred to the County Bar Association that there's an inherent conflict of interest when they decide to rate a candidate. So let's say, for instance, you're my client, we go to court, and we have an opposing counsel. Opposing counsel gave the judge a well-qualified rating and contributed to the judge's campaign, gave the judge $500. How do you think you're going to feel if you get a decision that's not in your favor and you find out about this? Why are we allowing attorneys, the very people that are likely to appear in front of these judges, the opportunity to rate a candidate who they may appear in front of? And why are we allowing attorneys to contribute to the political campaigns of judicial candidates? I mean, people are fed up with money and politics, and especially with justice. That is a place that needs to be hands-off, and everybody needs to be extremely transparent.
Very good. We're going to pause a moment for station identification, and then we're going to be back with Michelle Hagan, a judicial candidate and author of a blog on legal issues for consumers. And she's going to read us 10 tips of what the public ought to know when voting in judicial elections.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
We're back with Michelle Hagan, who is a judicial candidate, but also Michelle runs the blog TrialReady.com,
where she has tips for consumers, including some tips on what you should know about judicial races.
So in keeping with trying to educate and inform voters, I put together 10 things to know about judicial elections. And I get asked these questions as I'm out talking with voters. So number one is that the Superior Court judges are elected by the people in a countywide election. It's not a citywide election. So if you live in Cardiff, Ramona, or Oceanside, you vote for a judge. And judges, when they are vacate the seat, the governor is given the opportunity to temporarily appoint a judge until that seat is up for election. And judges sit for 6 years. It's a 6-year term as a Superior Court judge. And another thing you need to know is that there are no contribution limits in judicial races. In other words, individuals, businesses, PACs, etc., can give as much as they want to judicial campaigns. Judges and judicial candidates are not allowed to publicly endorse or oppose non-judicial candidates. So what that means is, as a judicial candidate, I can't endorse somebody running for mayor, city council, supervisor, any of that. We can only endorse judicial candidates. And in San Diego County, there are approximately 131 Superior Court judges. About 45 of the judges are up for election every 2 years, with their name only appearing on the ballot when they are being challenged. If the judge is not challenged, they are automatically elected to a new 6-year term after the November general election. If a judge decides to withdraw from the election during the nomination period, then the seat becomes open for 5 days to allow candidates to file and run for the open seat. If one candidate receives over 50% of the votes, they are elected to the bench in the primary election. Otherwise, the top two vote-getters face a runoff in the November general election. It's also important that judges remain impartial and fair. And to uphold impartiality, judges and judicial candidates are not allowed to make statements on issues, cases, or controversies as such matters are likely to come before them while they're on the bench. So, for instance, I get asked all the time what's my position on X and Y. Unlike a city council candidate, I can't talk about those issues because they may come before me when I'm on the bench. And Superior Court judges generally preside over jury trials, bench, or otherwise known as judge trials, hearings and motions on criminal and civil matters. Superior Court judgments, convictions, and orders may be appealed to the Court of Appeal, the California Supreme Court, and may be heard by the U.S. Supreme Court. Each judicial race is designated a seat number. For instance, in my race, it's seat 25. The seat number is just a random numerical designation assigned for ballot purposes. The seat number does not refer to any department, courthouse, or area of the county. I get asked that question all the time. What region would the judge be presiding? It's the whole county. A Superior Court judge can be assigned to any division, civil, criminal, family law, probate, juvenile, etc. It's the presiding judge who determines the length of the assignment and which courthouse you will be assigned to. And the qualifications to run for judge is you need to be an attorney who's a U.S. citizen, a registered voter, and a member of the California State Bar for 10 years. Then you could run for judicial office. I hope these 10 things to know about judicial elections have been very helpful to you. Thank you.
Michelle, I want to thank you very, very much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ. And we certainly are reaching out to the Bar Association as well, in all fairness, and inviting them if they wish to come on and tell us their side of the story about the whole rating system. We would certainly welcome the opportunity to do that. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
The United States Forestry Service cannot charge day-use fees to hikers who don't use facilities, a federal judge ruled on April 30th. United States District Court Judge Terry Hatter, Jr. found that Cleveland National Forest, along with the Angeles, Los Padres, and San Bernardino National Forests, violated the law by requiring paid passes at busy sites, even if hikers were merely parking and not using facilities such as picnic tables or toilets. Regional passes cost $5 a day or $30 a year. The passes have brought in millions of dollars for the four Southern California forests. A regional forestry service representative indicated the agency is reviewing the decision and has declined to comment, the Los Angeles Times reported. In San Diego County, the ruling stands to impact visitors to the Cleveland National Forest, where fees have been imposed, even in places with no facilities, such as the popular trail to Cedar Creek Falls in East County. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Miriam Raftery with an agricultural report. A deadly new virus has wiped out 10% of all pigs in America in the last year, the National Journal reports. Now, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's chief economist, Dr. Joseph Glauber, the porcine epidemic diarrhea virus, or PED, has spread to 30 states. That includes California, the California Department of Food and Agriculture confirms. Most older pigs recover within 7 to 10 days, but the virus is deadly for nearly 100% of baby pigs under 3 weeks old. There is no vaccine, no effective treatment, and no cure. The first case of PED in the United States occurred at an Ohio farm 1 year ago in May of 2013. It's not known how it entered the United States, though it's also been found in Asia and now Canada. Some have theorized that China may be where the pig virus originated. China, the world's top consumer of pork, has banned imports of live pigs and pig feed from the U.S. So has Japan and now France in an effort to slow the spread of the disease. There are also some interstate restrictions on transporting pigs within the United States. Here in San Diego County, with the county fair at Del Mar and the Ramona County Fair both coming up, it's important for people entering livestock for judging to be aware of these steps to take to protect your animals and others. California's Department of Food and Agriculture cautions those who raise pigs or exhibit them at fairs to take care to wash your hands after handling the animals and improve sanitary conditions, since the virus is spread through manure that can survive even in small bits that travel on boots or in trucks. Some farmers require workers to change clothes and shoes after entering pigsties or even ban visitors to their farms. The BBC reports that some suspect pig feed may also play a role in spreading the disease. That's because dried pig blood has been added to some feed given to weaned piglets. A video shot by the Humane Society has sparked outrage, showing what it called a piglet smoothie made from infected animals being fed to sows at a Kentucky farm, and yet this practice has not been banned. PED causes vomiting and diarrhea in infected pigs. In California, the disease must be reported to the state. Across the nation, the impact on pig farmers has been severe, with some farmers hardest hit by the virus left with little to sell, Dr. Glauber told the House Committee on Agriculture's Subcommittee on Livestock, Rural Development, and Credit on April 30th. The good news is that the virus poses no risk to humans, agriculture officials say. The bad news is that if you plan to serve pork at your next summer barbecue, you'd better plan on paying a lot more, since due to the viral outbreak, pork prices have risen 20% in the past year.
A former SDG&E employee has filed a wrongful termination lawsuit against the company. Michael Goncalves claims he was fired after speaking out about faulty instruments used to check for gas leaks in homes. The former service technician said the devices failed to detect gas leaks. He also said that at least two technicians had gas explode or flash in their faces. Other ex-workers have filed suit in the past, claiming they were fired by SDG&E for speaking out on different issues. Dan Gillian told 10 News, "When SDG&E tells you to shut up and stop talking and you keep doing it, you're on their target list. They don't like whistleblowers." SDG&E claims it fired Goncalves for falsifying records about his location in order to get paid for work done after he was finished working for the day. SDG&E also denies any safety issues with the gas measurement instruments, but did acknowledge that it replaced the devices in 2013. The company said that other employees complained about the equipment but were not terminated. SDG&E insists that it has a policy prohibiting retaliation against employees who raise issues. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
A 17-month-old toddler was bitten 3 times in the abdomen by a rattlesnake Friday afternoon while playing on the patio of a home near Barrett Lake in Deerhorn Valley. NBC reported that the incident was reported at 4:20 p.m. Mercy Air flew out of the area at about 5 p.m. with the young patient on board, according to the Deerhorn Valley Antler. The child was taken to Rady Children's Hospital. Fortunately, the toddler's older sister, Jessica Taylor, posted on the Deerhorn Valley Facebook page Saturday morning that her brother is being treated with anti-venom and is expected to be fine. She added, "He's a tough little guy." A neighbor has said that the child's family was from Oregon and new to the area. Deerhorn Valley Antler editor Kim Hamilton said a snake bite is the worst fear for residents in the rural community due to the long distances to medical aid. She said her neighbor recently lost a small dog to a bite from a large rattler on Easter, and that several other dogs have been bitten as well. With unseasonably warm weather, the snakes have been out early, she said, adding, "We've had 2 already." If you live in the unincorporated areas of San Diego County and want help to remove rattlesnakes, you can call Animal Services at 619-236-2341. Rattlesnakes prey on rodents, so removing places that attract mice and rats, such as uncovered wood piles, can help lessen the odds that snakes will take up residence in your yard. When hiking, stay on trails, carry a walking stick, and avoid walking through tall brush. Never reach onto rocks where you can't see what's on top, since rattlers often bask in the sun atop those warm rocky ledges. If you do see a rattlesnake or you hear that telltale rattle, back away calmly. Bites are rare, but if you are bitten, call 911 immediately, since prompt administration of anti-venom is key. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson with a report on a lawsuit filed against the City of San Diego by the Union of Medical Marijuana Patients. The suit contends that the city's new regulations for medical marijuana dispensaries are too restrictive and won't allow enough dispensaries to meet the needs of patients citywide. The regulations adopted in March set distance requirements between marijuana collectives and homes, schools, and parks, as well as other family-oriented facilities. In addition, operators of cooperatives must get conditional use permits, renewable every 5 years, and public safety permits that must be renewed each year. The plaintiffs say that a map reveals that the new rules would allow no more than 30 cooperatives, but that these would be concentrated in certain parts of the city, forcing some patients to travel relatively far to obtain medical marijuana, Courthouse News Service reported. Even though regulations have been enacted, the process of applying to legally sell medical marijuana in San Diego is expected to take 6 months to a year, city officials have indicated.
Many legal immigrants in California and across the country aren't pursuing citizenship. Even though more than 8 million nationwide are eligible to apply, many have never even taken the first step. Some immigrants cite the expense, which is about $700 in fees plus the cost of a lawyer. Others worry they don't speak English well enough to pass the citizenship test. Mark Lopez is with the Pew Hispanic Research Center. He says there are some key differences between having legal permanent status and being a U.S. citizen.
Legal permanent resident status does come with a number of benefits. being able to work legally. They do have to pay taxes. They can travel. But it doesn't include the right to vote or never be deported, because once you become a U.S. citizen, you cannot be deported.
A recent Pew Research Center poll found only 36% of Mexicans who are here legally actually go on to become naturalized U.S. citizens. This percentage is much less than other groups, including Cubans, Indians, and Europeans. Julissa Gutierrez is with the National Association of Latino Elected Officials. Her group is trying to encourage people to take the pathway to citizenship so they have the right to vote.
Oftentimes, immigrants coming into this country do not come with a full understanding of the law of the United States. They also come with experiences from their home country that may bar them as well. So these are things that, you know, it's a learning process.
The Pew poll also found that the vast majority of immigrants and the American public do support a pathway to citizenship. This is Lori Abbott, California News Service.
California Senator Barbara Boxer and four other U.S. senators have sent a letter to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission urging that stronger emergency regulations and security steps be taken at closed nuclear power plants where tons of spent radioactive fuel are stored. That includes San Onofre, where spent fuel poses a danger to residents in San Diego and Orange counties for many years to come. In fact, the letter warns, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, or NRC's, own analysis concluded that a fire caused by spent fuel at a closed reactor could cause health and economic impacts equal to those caused by an accident at a nuclear plant still in operation. The NRC is now finalizing a decision claiming that spent nuclear fuel can safely be stored at least 60 years after a nuclear plant is decommissioned. But that assumption is based on proper emergency preparedness and security regulations being in place after the plant closes. The commission will also vote on whether to accelerate transfer of spent nuclear fuel to dry casks. But the senators warn what the NRC failed to state in its court and other filings was that licensees of decommissioning reactors are almost always exempted from the regulatory requirements within 2 years of the reactors being shut down. The senators called that policy unacceptable and urged the NRC to reverse this policy of exemptions. Meltdowns at Fukushima, Japan, highlight the need for evacuation plans extending out 50 miles from nuclear facilities, which would include portions of East County in San Diego. Spent fuel pools could also be potential targets for terrorists, the senators concluded. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Vermont is poised to become the first state in the nation to enact legislation requiring labeling of products that contain genetically modified organisms, or GMOs. Governor Pete Shumlin is expected to sign the bill on May 8th. Passage of the bill paves the way for other states to follow suit. Also, food manufacturers may reformulate their products nationwide to be GMO-free, rather than create special labels in just one state or several if more states with GMO bills pending follow suit. Already, Connecticut and Maine have passed GMO labeling laws, but with trigger clauses requiring several other states to pass labeling requirements before these go into effect. Some other states have ballot initiatives pending. This has already occurred in other countries that have required labeling or banned GMO products altogether. But the grocery industry doesn't want consumers to know if foods are genetically modified or not. So, the Grocery Manufacturers Association is trying to push a bill through Congress that would preempt Vermont's new law or similar laws in other states in the future, the Organic Consumers Association warns. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
When Alpine resident Alana Light heard about the tragic sinking of a Korean ferry boat, she feared for her 24-year-old daughter, who teaches English at a private school in South Korea. "My dad called me and asked if Kayla was all right," she recalled, adding that when she heard about the tragedy, quote, "I had a panic attack until I got through to her." Fortunately, Kayla was fine. But at least 242 passengers on the Seawall ferry have died and another 60 remain missing. Most of those passengers were high school students. The captain and 14 crew members have been arrested for leaving the ship and abandoning passengers, including children told to stay in their cabins. Two others have also been arrested for overloading the ship, which had 476 people on board.
an operations technician for a local TV station, Light observed that the biggest worldwide change in coverage of such tragedies has been the rampant use of cell phones to videotape and narrate events. She told East County Magazine, "No fictional Hollywood-produced movie can ever compare with the deadly reality of the video uploaded to YouTube of the future drowning victims. These poor students documented the horrors as they died." Light said she forced herself to read the transcripts, unable to bear watching the horrific video footage with audio. But the worst irony she found was that it didn't have to happen. The shipping company compromised safety to make more money, she said, and it could have happened anywhere, to anybody. The ship was owned by the family of millionaire Yoo Byung-un, founder of a religious cult in which 32 members committed suicide in 1987. He has owned many business interests, including the Highland Springs Resort in California and an organic farm at that facility, and he's also known as the photographer Ahe. Yoo has denied ties to the ill-fated ship, which is owned by his sons. Moved to raise awareness of the tragedy and help raise funds for victims' families, Light wrote a poem and created a video tribute to the victims with photos documenting the tragedy. She hopes many people will share her video, since YouTube will pay if she gets enough hits to make it go viral. "I will donate anything it brings in to a victim's family fund," she pledges. "Let us hope nothing like this happens again." The video is titled Tribute to the Victims of the Sewol, that's S-E-W-O-L, and can be viewed on YouTube or in the World Watch section at eastcountymagazine.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Leon Thompson with today's Capitol Report. Republican Paul Ryan is stirring up controversy after he announced plans to hold a hearing next week on poverty, but he has refused to let any poor people testify. The hearing is called A Progress Report on the War on Poverty, Lessons from the Front Line. It will feature three experts. However, none of them are poor people struggling to make ends meet. Ryan and his committee have refused to allow members of a group called Witness to Hunger speak. The organization's advocacy program shares stories of low-income Americans. It seems that the Republican leadership of the committee doesn't want its members to actually hear from anyone who is actually poor and may be able to give first-hand accounts of what life is like when you don't have enough money to live on. The committee also faces accusations that it has written testimonies submitted in the past just disappear. At least two people claim to have submitted documentation that mysteriously vanished, Think Progress reported. Tiana Gaines Turner is one of the people who was refused the right to testify. She has six children and often runs out of money and food at the end of the month. "If you want to really understand," she has said, "you need to speak to the people themselves firsthand. We're real people, not just numbers."
This is Miriam Raftery with an update on several measures that have qualified to appear on your June ballot. Some others are still pending. Ballot initiatives approved to appear on the ballot so far include Prop 41, the Veterans Housing and Homeless Prevention Bond Act of 2014. California has 19,000 homeless veterans, more than any other state in the nation. This measure would establish a Housing for Homeless Veterans Fund through this bond measure. Prop 42 is a constitutional amendment that would make open government laws part of the state constitution so the legislature can't take away the rights of citizens, as it did last year. It would require all local government agencies to comply with the Ralph M. Brown Act, requiring open public meetings and notification to the public, and also protecting your right to access public records. An important initiative for consumers, which has not yet been assigned a ballot number, would require health insurance companies to get approval from the insurance commissioner before they can raise your health insurance premiums. Such permission is already required for auto or homeowner insurance companies to raise their rates. The initiative would also prohibit health, car, and homeowners insurance companies from using your credit history or your lack of prior coverage to charge you more. Another measure aims to provide safe, clean, and reliable drinking water for Californians, while yet another would prohibit the legislature from sending appropriations bills to the governor until an annual budget is passed, also imposing other budgetary restrictions on the governor.
In addition, there is a referendum that seeks to overturn Indian gaming compacts with two Native American tribes, the North Fork Rancheria of Mono Indians and the Wiat tribe. Several proposed measures failed to get enough signatures to qualify for the ballot, including one that would have required parental notification and a waiting period for abortions sought by young women under age 18. Another measure that seeks to require drug and alcohol testing of doctors is pending signature approval, and numerous others are still circulating, seeking signatures to qualify for the June ballot.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health report. Did you know that increasingly scientists are finding a link between what you eat and how well your brain functions? Your diet is one key factor, it turns out, in whether or not you will develop Alzheimer's or other forms of dementia as you age, according to the Alzheimer's Association. Now, the most current research shows that a brain-healthy diet is one that reduces the risk of heart disease and diabetes, encourages good blood flow to the brain, and is low in fat and cholesterol. Like your heart, your brain needs the right balance of nutrients, including protein and sugar, to function well. A brain-healthy diet is most effective when combined with physical and mental activity, as well as social interaction. Having a healthy body weight is good for your brain as well as the rest of your body, for overall good health. A long-term study of 1,500 adults found that those who were obese in middle age were twice as likely to develop dementia in later life, and those who also had high cholesterol and high blood pressure had six times the risk of dementia. It's best to adopt an overall food lifestyle rather than a short-term diet, and eat in moderation. Here are some more tips. Reduce your intake of foods high in fat and cholesterol. Studies have shown that high intake of saturated fat and cholesterol clogs the arteries, and that's associated with the higher risk of Alzheimer's disease. However, HDL, or good cholesterol, may actually help protect brain cells. So use mono and polyunsaturated fats such as olive oil, for example. Try baking or grilling food instead of frying it. Increase your intake of protective foods. Current research suggests that some foods may reduce the risk of heart disease and stroke and appear to protect your brain cells. In general, dark-skinned fruits and vegetables have the highest level of naturally occurring antioxidant levels. Such vegetables include kale, spinach, Brussels sprouts, alfalfa sprouts, broccoli, beets, red bell peppers, onions, corn, and eggplant. Fruits with high antioxidant levels include prunes, raisins, blueberries, blackberries, strawberries, raspberries, plums, oranges, red grapes, and cherries. Cold water fish contain beneficial omega-3 fatty acids that's good for your brain, too. These include halibut, mackerel, salmon, trout, and tuna. Some nuts can be a useful part of your diet. Almonds, pecans, and walnuts are good sources of vitamin E, an antioxidant. One study of elderly women showed that those who ate the most green, leafy, and cruciferous vegetables in the group measured in at 1 to 2 years younger in mental function than women who ate few of these vegetables. Vitamins may also be helpful. There is some indication that vitamin E, or vitamins E and C together, vitamin B12 and folate may be important in lowering your risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. A brain-healthy diet will also help increase your intake of these vitamins and the trace elements necessary for your body to use them effectively. For more information, you can visit the Alzheimer's Association's website at www.alzheimers.org.
A world-famous gambler accused of cheating Barona Casino out of $8,000 will be arraigned in court on May 14th. In a preliminary hearing earlier this month at the El Cajon Courthouse, Judge John Thompson found sufficient evidence for the defendant to stand trial. According to the prosecution, Anargyros Karaborniotis, also known as Archie Karas, was caught on surveillance cameras marking cards at the Barona Casino in Lakeside. He faces charges of burglary, winning by fraudulent means, and cheating. If convicted, he could face up to 3 years in prison. Karas gained fame after he reportedly turned a $50 bet into a $40 million winning streak on games of poker and dice, though he later lost it all, gambling his fortune away. This is not the first time questions have been raised by authorities about Karas, who has been arrested 4 times previously in Nevada. On May 14th, the famed high roller will learn whether his luck has finally run out. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
it's time for the East County Magazine Trivia Quiz. Welcome to another edition of the East County Magazine Trivia Quiz.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah. There you go. Our contestants today are Ed and Elizabeth. Welcome.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Thank you.
Okay. Our first question is, Helix Water Board member Kathleen Hedberg recently won a new car on The Price is Right after dressing up in an outrageous costume. What costume did she wear?
I'm going to say butterfly.
Butterfly. That would be pretty.
Godzilla.
Nah. Okay, let me give you some choices here. Multiple choice. Was it an Easter bunny, a drop of water, a surfer, or a banana?
I've got to go with drop of water.
That would have made sense, but it's wrong.
I would go with banana.
You're right. Okay, one point for Ed. Okay. Many unusual animals once roamed the Anza-Borrego Desert in prehistoric times. Which one of these did not? We'll go right to the multiple choice on this one. Was it mastodons, saber-toothed tigers, Tyrannosaurus rex, or giant zebras?
Tyrannosaurus rex.
You are right. That's right. There actually were no dinosaurs that have been found, at least not yet, out there. But we did have zebras and saber-toothed tigers and mastodons.
Who knew?
Okay, who knew? That's right. Okay, next one. Feel free to shout out your questions here. Something unusual recently delayed the Daytona 500 this year while East County's own Jimmy Johnson was competing. What was it?
It was, I want to say, a duck.
A duck. A duck on the racetrack. That'd be pretty dangerous, but nope.
I know this hardly ever happens here, but it rained.
It rained. Actually, it rained and rained and rained and rained. But there was more than just rain, though. So here's the choices. Was it hail, a tornado, an earthquake, or a streaker?
Well, it is NASCAR. There's a lot of beer out there. We could say a streaker.
Nope.
Well, let's go for tornado.
Yes. Yes.
Really?
Tornado warning. Yes. Hmm. That's right. Okay. The term apple picking means more than plucking fruit nowadays. What is the new meaning?
Trying to get away with something you're not supposed to.
Here, was it playing a banjo, shopping for a computer, stealing iPhones, or replanting manzanita trees burned in the wildfires?
Stealing iPhones.
That's right. It's according to the San Diego State University campus police, and it is a trend, unfortunately, nationwide. So hang on to those iPhones. Next question. San Diego Gas and Electric has tripled its estimate for how much water its new eco substation will use during construction of the project. How many gallons will it take?
Should we get our options?
Nobody wants to just hazard a guess here? Okay.
Yeah,
no. Is it 1 million gallons, 9 million gallons, 19 million gallons, or 90 million gallons?
I'll go for 19. 19 million gallons.
Nope. Mm-mm.
I'll say 90.
90 is right.
Wow.
90 million gallons.
Incredible.
Wow. Last question. Think carefully now. What did San Diego Sheriff's deputies recently take off for a good cause?
Oh, their shirts? I don't know.
That's not right, actually. No. Was it their badges, their boots, their clothes, or their hair?
Their boots.
Nope.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say boots because I know the firefighters do a boot thing.
Yeah, firefighters do pass the boot, but nope. Actually, they shaved off their hair to benefit children with cancer.
Really?
Yes, they did.
That's nice of them.
Pretty cool.
I thought so, too. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Trivia Quiz.
This is Ed Barena for East County Magazine and KNSJ with some important safety tips. On average, 20,000 deaths and 21 million medical visits occur annually, Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna reminds us. Firefighters and paramedics respond to thousands of accidents every day, he says. Chief DiGiovanna, author of the Chief's Corner column on East County Magazine, offers these tips to help prevent accidents in your home. In the bathroom, cleaners should be locked away, out of the reach of children. Medications, scissors, razor blades, and cleaning supplies should be kept in a locked cabinet or out of the reach of children and pets. Non-skid stickers in the tub and shower can prevent slips and falls. Children should not be left unattended in or around the pool. Pool areas should be fenced in with a gate secured with a child-proof safety lock or latch. Electrical safety. Children can stick objects in open sockets and get hurt. Unused electrical outlets must have safety plugs to prevent accidental electrocution from foreign objects being put in the socket. Every home should have a fire extinguisher. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors should be on each floor of the home and tested monthly. Batteries should be changed at least every 6 months or as necessary. A working fire extinguisher must be accessible. Keep paper towels, plastic plates, plastic utensils, and anything other than cooking equipment away from the stove. These items can easily start a fire if left too close to the range. Keep pesticides and cleaners away from children. Store chemicals in a locked cabinet or keep on a high shelf that children cannot reach. Do not spray bug spray or pesticides near a child's toys, since toys tend to go into a child's mouth. In addition, never leave household chemicals unattended. Unfortunately, small children may try to open the products and drink the contents.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.